love on VOA1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear reports from Gregory Stockel and Dan Friedel. Faith Perlow and Jill Robbins present this week's Everyday Grammar. Finally, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about the presidency of Chester A. Arthur. But first, here is Gregory Stockel.
Brazilian police say an Italian metal refiner purchased gold from a trader that mined the metal illegally. The company, police say, purchased the gold from the Amazon rainforest area in the South American country. Public documents show that the refiner, Kimet, has supplied the metal to four of the world's largest technology companies. Tech companies Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, and Alphabet, the parent company of Google, name Kimet as a source of some gold used in their products. Technology companies often use small amounts of the metal in circuit boards. Circuit boards are used in technology products like computers. The investigative news agency Reporter Brasil secured police documents that were then examined by reporters with Reuters. The documents showed Brazilian federal police have accused Kimet of buying millions of dollars of gold from company CHM do Brasil. CHM do Brasil reportedly sourced the gold from illegal miners. Lawyers representing CHM say the company sourced its gold legally with all necessary documentation. Illegal mining has increased since Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro took office in 2019. Bolsonaro has supported small mining groups called wildcatters and has sought to legalize mining on lands of indigenous or native populations. Unregulated mines have destroyed rainforest land in the Amazon and have polluted rivers with mercury. Miners have had violent conflicts with indigenous groups seeking to protect their land. Brazilian research group Instituto Escolas estimated that the country produced 84 metric tons of illegal gold in Bolsonaro's first 2 years in office. That is up 23% from the 2 years before and is nearly half of Brazil's total gold output. Larissa Rodriguez is a writer of the Escolas report. She said, "A company that is buying gold from Brazil already knows there is a huge risk it is buying irregular gold, Amazon blood gold." A Kimet representative said the company cut off relations with CHM after learning of the reports of illegal gold trade in October 2021. A police document from August 2021 stated that Kimet reportedly bought $385 million worth of gold from CHM between 2015 and 2020. A police investigation is ongoing into the possible CHM crimes. The four American tech companies listed Kimet among more than 100 gold refiners in their supply chains, during the investigation's 5-year time period. They also listed Kimet in their most recent 2021 documents. Giovanni Prelazzi is a company representative for Kimet. He said Kimet does not have direct relationships with the four tech companies. Instead, Prelazzi said, it sells gold to banks that can resell it for different uses. He did not name the banks. Apple has said that its policies ban the use of illegally mined minerals. The iPhone maker said companies that cannot follow such requirements are removed from its supply chain. Amazon, Alphabet, and Microsoft did not comment. Kimet said it began working with the company Deloitte to look into its other suppliers after learning of the CHM investigation in Brazil. In April 2020, Kimet was again approved by London Bullion Market Association, or LBMA, as meeting gold sourcing standards. I'm Gregory Stockel.
A group of American Jewish volunteers who speak Russian visited Poland this summer to work with Ukrainian refugee children. The children were forced to leave Ukraine after Russia invaded on February 24th. Poland has taken in more refugees than any other country. The children draw pictures, learn English and Polish, and work on math skills. The volunteers are helping the children get ready to go to school in Poland later this month. It will be their first time going to school in the new country. They finished school last year by video after leaving Ukraine. Most of the volunteers do not speak Ukrainian, so they communicate with the children in Russian, which is also spoken in Ukraine. The Americans are either Russian-speaking immigrants who left the former Soviet Union more than 30 years ago, or are the children of immigrants. Ilana Baird is a rabbi or Jewish religious leader from California. She is one of the 10 Americans working at a summer activities center known as a camp in the city of Warsaw. The name of the camp is Fun in the Summer. Baird said the volunteers feel a sense of obligation to help those who are suffering right now. She said, Jewish people have suffered in the past. Baird talked about the Holocaust, pogroms, and anti-Semitism. Pogrom is a word from the Russian language used to describe attacks on Jewish communities in the 1800s and early 1900s. Anti-Semitism is a word used to describe discrimination against Jewish people. She said the Ukrainians living in Poland are suffering, and the volunteers want to help them feel better. Baird said, some of the children are feeling better. The rabbi noted one young girl who at first made a drawing in only black and white because she said she missed her black dog at home. A little later, after hearing stories and watching a show with puppets, the little girl made a drawing in color. The girl said she made a pink heart for happiness. The summer camp will help the children get used to living in Poland. Many of them left Ukraine quickly, and only with their mothers. Many men were required to stay behind and help with the war effort. When the children are at camp studying and playing, their mothers can look for work. Marta Sarasin is the head of the Jewish Community Center of Warsaw. She said, about 30 of the 90 children in the camp are Jewish. Sarasin described the days at camp as a lovely bubble for kids to be kids and not have to worry about their problems for a short time. The 10 Americans working at the Fun in the Summer camp are part of a group of nearly 90 who left their jobs in the U.S. to help Ukrainian refugees in Poland and Hungary. Jewish groups in the U.S., Poland, and Israel worked together to find people who wanted to help. The camp is at a Jewish school called Lauder Morasha. It started with the help of Helise Lieberman, an American who is active in Jewish life in Warsaw. She said, there would not have been any Jewish organizations available to help refugees in Poland 30 years ago. Lieberman explained that Poland was home to more than 3 million Jews before World War II, but most were killed by German Nazi forces during the Holocaust. She said the Jewish community in Poland only started to come back after the collapse of the Soviet-supported communism. And it looks like the volunteers are helping the children. Baird, the rabbi, said one boy became upset when he found out that she was not Ukrainian. "Why did you come here?" he asked. She answered, saying, "Because you don't need to be from Ukraine to help others. You just need to be human." I'm Dan Friedel.
In this week's Everyday Grammar Report, we will continue telling about how to communicate politely in emails. Murat, a reader of our website, asked if we could talk about how to open and close our emails when making a polite request. Thank you, Murat, for this idea. Today, we will talk about greetings, how we can close our emails, and finish our discussion about polite requests. To set a good tone for your request, consider the subject heading, the opening and the closing of your email. Some greetings include
Dear,
name of receiver. Dear is considered very formal.
Hello,
name of receiver. Hello is an acceptable greeting, but it is less formal. If the person answers with a less formal greeting, like hi or hey, then this is a signal that they prefer a less formal tone. You may want to change how you answer them. For closings, express your appreciation and remind the receiver that you expect an answer. You could say something like this.
I really appreciate your help. I look forward to your reply. Thank you for taking your time to read this email. I hope to hear from you soon.
Some simple ways to end the message include
sincerely,
followed by your name. Similar endings are
all the best, best wishes, thanks.
Or,
thank you.
These are all common formal expressions to politely close your emails. When making a request by email, we want to show awareness of the receiver's situation. To do this, we use hedging expressions to soften what we want to say. hedging expressions, let the writer of the email say what they want to say, but in a less direct way, and more politely. For example, one could say,
I'm sorry to bother you, but would you have time to review this report? I know you're busy, but if you get some free time later, would you like to meet up for coffee? This is a lot to ask, but do you mind waiting for me? I'm almost finished.
The hedging expressions come before the word but in the questions. The request comes after. These expressions show the receiver of the email that we understand their situation. We can also use the words possible and possibly when hedging a request. These words express the probability or chance of the request being fulfilled. Let us look at these examples.
Could you possibly drive me to the train station later? Is there any possible way for you to meet me downtown?
When using possibly with a modal verb like could, it shows the receiver that you are even more aware that the request might not be fulfilled. Giving the receiver the chance to say no makes the request more polite. When making polite requests, we can offer a good thought or action to balance the request. For example, you can show your appreciation or thankfulness.
I would really appreciate the favor.
The verb appreciate is a transitive verb, which means it takes a direct object. You can add the adverb really to strengthen the expression. You can also offer something in exchange for the request. For example, you could say,
I owe you a favor.
Or,
I can cover for you next time.
To owe someone a favor means that you will return a kindness or service to someone because they have done something for you. To cover for someone means that you will take their place for a task next time. You can include a reason for the request. This could be an explanation or an excuse. For example, you could say,
would you mind reading my essay? I'd really like your feedback.
Or,
would it be okay if we reschedule our lunch for next week? I'm not feeling well today.
In these examples, the reason is a separate statement that comes after the request. We do not always need a reason for the request, but giving a reason makes the request more polite, and the receiver may be more willing to help you. In today's everyday grammar, we looked at additional ways to express a request politely in an email. We can use hedging expressions and possibly to show awareness of the receiver's situation. We can offer a good thought or action to balance a request. We can include a reason to support the request. And be aware of your openings and closings in emails. A formal and thoughtful greeting can make your request more likely to receive the answer you hoped for. I'm Faith Perlow.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Chester A. Arthur. The letter A is for Alan, his middle name. Arthur took office because of an unexpected event. He was sworn in as vice president in March 1881 under James Garfield. But only 100 days into Garfield's term, the president was shot. He suffered for months. Arthur was not close to Garfield. The two men belonged to the same party, but they had different ideas on the issues of the day. They publicly disagreed on a number of subjects. If Garfield lived, Arthur would probably not have much power in his administration. But Garfield eventually died. By this time, it was well established that if the President of the United States dies in office, the Vice President becomes the President. So in September 1881, Arthur became the country's chief executive. He served the remaining 3.5 years of Garfield's term. Historians say that, for the most part, Arthur performed ably and well. Chester Arthur was raised in the northeastern states of Vermont and New York. He was one of 8 children in his family. Their father was a religious leader and anti-slavery activist. Arthur attended college in New York, then taught school and studied law. But he never wanted to stay in a small town and live modestly. He wanted to live in New York City, work as a lawyer and public official, become wealthy, and enjoy the lifestyle of a gentleman. And that is what he did. Arthur advanced from an entry-level job in a law office to a leadership position in the military during the Civil War. After the fighting stopped, he worked in a good-paying job as a lawyer, and then accepted a top position in the government. For 7 years, Arthur served as the collector of the Port of New York. His job involved supervising 1,300 people. They collected large amounts of money that came from taxes on imported goods. The job had a political element, too. It was under the control of a U.S. senator from New York, Roscoe Conkling. Conkling was known as a Republican Party chief who traded political support for financial and other benefits. Arthur was never found guilty of accepting money or gifts in exchange for the help of his office, but he was closely linked to Conkling's political machine. When Rutherford B. Hayes became president in 1878, he tried to fight corruption in government jobs. He targeted Conkling and Arthur. Arthur's position as the collector of the Port of New York was one of the issues in the election of 1880. President Hayes had suspended Arthur from the job. To get it back, Arthur and Conkling supported an effort to re-elect former president Ulysses S. Grant. But another candidate won the Republican Party's presidential nomination, James Garfield. Garfield and Arthur were not natural allies. Although they were both Republicans, they represented different points of view. Political leaders hoped to unite the party. So when Garfield was chosen as the presidential candidate, they added Arthur as the vice presidential nominee. The effort to unite the party worked well enough to win the election, but relations between the two men were uneasy. One of Garfield's first acts was to appoint someone for Arthur's old job in New York. The new president wanted someone who was not loyal to Conkling, so he gave the position to one of his supporters instead. In protest, Conkling resigned from the Senate. But then events took an unexpected turn. Garfield was shot by a mentally unbalanced man who believed the president owed him a government job. And Chester A. Arthur became president. When Arthur took office, he had the public image of being an experienced political operator. Most people believed he cared only about supporting the aims of a small part of the Republican Party. Instead, President Arthur took an independent position on several issues. In opposition to most of his party, Arthur supported legislation to reform the country's civil service. It aimed to clean up corruption in government and took away some of the ability of politicians to give government jobs to their supporters. To be fair, in the short term, the act helped Arthur's party. Arthur also broke with the Republican Party leadership to support a reduction in tariffs, and he strongly argued to limit spending federal money on projects that helped only a few areas or businesses. Instead, he wanted to cut taxes so more people would profit from the government's surplus. Finally, Arthur vetoed an anti-immigration act from Congress. The measure proposed banning Chinese immigrants for 20 years. Arthur argued that the Chinese had improved the American economy by helping build a railroad across the country. He also did not want to hurt potential trade with China. However, when Congress offered to ban Chinese immigrants for only 10 years, Arthur agreed. In addition, his administration banned immigrants who were considered poor, criminal, or mentally insane. Perhaps Arthur's most memorable act as president, however, was to redecorate the White House. He did not like its appearance inside, so he asked one of New York's top designers, Louis Tiffany, to make the home brighter and more stylish. In the newly remodeled rooms, Arthur held parties with fine food and drink for elite guests. He was known as the gentleman boss. Observers then and now say that Arthur served well as president. He was a solid leader after the difficult years of the Civil War and Reconstruction. But Arthur did not live much beyond his presidency. Shortly into his term, he learned he had a serious kidney disease that would likely kill him. As a result, he did not try hard to get reelected. Instead, after finishing his term, he returned to his home in New York. Arthur tried to work as a lawyer, but he soon became too sick. His wife had died of malaria before he became president, and he liked to spend his free time fishing or with friends instead of with his children. But in his last months, he could not enjoy those activities either. He died at home at the age of 57. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today.
Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.